Asian Pop Nation on Sin 90.7.
Hello, this is Asian Pop Nation, Sin's flagship show for Asian music and Asian pop culture. And today is a very special day. It's the first day of season two. And we are in the studio with most of the group. Woohoo!
Yay, guys.
Enthusiasm is through the roof.
Wow. Let's just go around the table and say our names. My name is Tracy.
Hi, I'm Jessie.
Hello, I'm Annabella.
Hello, I'm Taruki.
I'm Senya.
It's me, Lucia, here.
And Ethan.
And we are all in the studio to talk about a great many things. A great many Asian things, in fact. First up, you might have heard, we have a person called Bella in the studio today, and she's not an intruder, she's actually a new member of our team. Woo! It's impossible, it's crazy, we actually finally have a new member. But it's good to have you here. You'll get to learn more about Bella very soon. But after that, we're going to be talking through a new movie featuring the inimitable, beautiful man, Dev Patel, also directed and written by him. And me and Leisha and Ethan all went to see it together. We're going to talk about it. After that, we're going to touch on Coachella. But yeah, that's the show we got in store for today. Hope you enjoy it. Oh yeah, I should probably talk about the songs that we play on the show, hey? So the songs we played to start off the show today, both by Japanese artists and both vampire themed.
Is it because we have a member named Annabella and you're like, oh my god, Bella, Twilight.
No, that wasn't intentional. That's
it
just
was subconscious.
That's a happy little coincidence. It was because in season one, we started with a bunch of like songs about like vampires or eating people. Like that was how we started the season one playlist. So I decided to continue that this season. And these are both really fun songs. So I'm like, these need to be heard up first so people listen to them. First up, Koshuni with their song Artificial Vampire. Very sweet but sinister. After that, Bite You by Mewk. Yeah, both of these are female fronted bands from Japan. So, we're going to continue with the songs right now. This next one is from Wooa and it's called Blush.
This is Asian Pop Nation, the flagship show on Sin for all things Asian pop culture and music. You heard Blush by Wooa, Hair Down by Tui, and that last song was Sudoku by Fisherman featuring Yumbi, because guess who is here to finish off the Sudoku puzzle that is the Asian Pop Nation team? It's Annabella!
It's me. I solved the puzzle.
So this is a part of the show whenever a new member comes in. We're just here to hear all about why you're here. What is it about Asian pop culture that you love? So I guess start off with a little bit with like a bit about you.
Hi, I'm Annabella, or Bella. You could call me that. I'm in my first year of uni. Yeah, I'm studying media communications. Definitely love K-pop. Love Seventeen. They're like my favorite.
Do you have something ever to say, Alicia?
Wait, oh my god, 17! Wait, who's your favorite in 17? Oh, it's so bad. I can't even choose, but like Dino and Hoshi.
Oh.
And Wanu. I can't. I can't.
Oh my gosh. Senya, no, in the K-pop economy, this is how we work.
You can never be too greedy.
Oh my god, no, that's so cute. What else is like other stuff that you really like in Asian media, like shows? What's like the genres you tend to gravitate towards?
I don't really like the sort of heavy like fantasy or horror stuff. I really love like slice of life things, a little bit more.
Like anime and webcomics or
webtoons, definitely.
Do you have anything that is your ride or die?
Yes. There's this webtoon called It's On by this author called Sokomin, and they did My Name Is Benny as well. Like, those two webtoons are, like, my favorite of all time.
Are they, like, slice of life?
Yeah, like, It's On is about, like, these two, like, siblings who immigrated from Korea. Like, they're, like, 9 years old and, like, 18. And it's really cute, like, their dynamic. Yeah.
Oh.
But I recommend.
I don't think anyone has read. Add it to your list. And then how did you hear of us? I mean, how did you hear of Sin?
It was kind of random. Like, it's so weird. So I moved houses, like, in 2022, and we had, like, this old boom box, like, radio player thing that I wanted to put in my room, like, because it could play CDs as well. So I wanted to play, like, my K-pop CDs on it. Oh. And then so me and my siblings were playing with like the radio player. I have two younger siblings. We were like playing and like listening to all the different stations, and we heard like a song from Turning Red, and I was like, we were all obsessed. We were all obsessed with that song. Yeah. And so I was like, why is this playing on the radio? This is so awesome. And then like they're literally like dancing in my room. It was so cute. Oh, and then yeah, it got to the end. Poor town, these. Yeah, it got to the end and it's like, hi, we're Asian Pop Nation. I'm like, oh my gosh, what is this? It was like, it was kind of fate. I don't know.
That is great, yeah. Because I think I know exactly what episode or show it is. Oh, that's amazing. It's kind of nice to hear, because we obviously get a lot of different pathways to the show from whoever comes along. I think Tracy is the only other person that I know who listened to Asia Pop Nation and then was like, yeah.
Bella, you mentioned before to me that you remember listening to an episode where we talked about Biden and BTS.
Is this when he visited, like, yes, the UN?
And did the finger hearts?
That's a very long time ago. Yeah. Are you listening to us?
That was 2022.
Yeah, this is like, this regularly that you listen to the show? And just like you,
that was that one time, and then something about BTS after. And then I'd listen in if I'd, like, remember, oh, it's a Tuesday. Oh, it's, like, 9 p.m. Okay, I'll turn it on.
That's so cool.
I hope you enjoy however long you're with us. Please stay a while. We'll try not to scare you off. But yeah, we're keen to learn more about what your interests are, your thoughts on certain music and shows and web comics as they come around, whatever you love to talk about that's Asian pop culture, Asian cultural related, your experiences. This is the show for you. And I guess now we'll get back into the music here at Asian Pop Nation. It's not Asian Pop Nation without the music. So we'll hit it off with Tumu and their song Awaini. Enjoy.
You're listening to Asian Pop Nation, and you just heard three Japanese tracks. We had Awaini by Tomo, Shituren Kaiten Sushi by Tokyo Shoki Shodo, yes, conveyor belt sushi, and AI Sunset by Guzo Kumuzu. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about next, Tracy?
We're going to be talking about Monkey Man. This is a movie that me, Ethan, and Leisha went to see very recently. It was released on the 4th of April, and it's like released in general cinemas, so like non-art house cinemas as well. So pretty wide release. The most well-known fact about this movie, I guess, is that it is directed, co-written, co-produced, and starring Dev Patel.
I love that man so much, guys.
Saving Please. People from stabbing.
No, oh my gosh. I've been waiting for this movie for so long. I remember us like off air, we were like, oh, after we're gonna take our break on APN, what are like future topics we're gonna talk about? And I straight away was like, we all need to see Monkey Man, and I'm gonna yap about it. And now we're here. I dragged Tracy and Ethan to the dark side. And now we're gonna talk about this film.
So, what did you know about this film before going into it?
I think Ethan and I both were deep in like interview Dev Patel, the interview spiral. I don't know. What were your findings?
Did you know much about this movie before it came out? Like before it was promoted?
My TBH, probably like first exposure to this movie, and like I was aware, like, oh my god, this is coming out, was when he premiered it at South by Southwest, and he got like a standing ovation from that, and dude was crying on stage, and I was like, oh my god, my man, and I was like, time for me to tune in. Yeah, that was for me, but I don't know about you.
Yeah, because I only heard about it when they dropped the trailer, and I was like, what is this? This looks really cool and John Wick-esque. Contrary to that, Dev Patel has actually been producing this for years now. Like, it's been like pre-COVID kind of thing. And when you hear about the interviews that we were talking about that we listened to, he's really spent a lot of years producing and writing and even like filming this throughout COVID. So this is like a long time coming kind of a project for him, which is really interesting to see it come into cinemas now.
Oh, I was going to say, on the point of like it showing up on cinemas, one of like the behind the scenes stuff that I was like, oh, like that was crazy about was the fact that this movie almost didn't even make it to cinemas. The original plan was that it got like bought out by Netflix, so it was going to be trapped in the streaming vault for quite a long time. But one of the producers kind of saw and was like, no, no, I think this film needs to be in like big screens, and then bought over it from Netflix. And then we're here now. But it just shocks me to think of like, wow, of an alternate universe where this, I would have not seen this in cinemas and seen it on like my little screen on my laptop.
Was
oh my gosh.
Producer? The guy from Get Out?
Yeah, Jordan Peele.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God. I can't imagine watching this show, this movie on Netflix, because that really does not do it justice. Seeing this movie in cinemas was an experience, let me tell you, because I went into this movie completely blind. I'd even, like, forgotten the fact that you described it before as, like, John Wick, but set in India. And the main thing that just got to me...
Did I?
You did. Like, that was how you basically
what?
Got me to
I
watch
said
it.
This was an action movie about revenge.
Absolutely, I said that.
Oh, yeah. I would never compare this to another medium that I only seen one of, and Xenia will judge me because we watched John Wick 4 together.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, as a caveat, like, it's not like John Wick at all. Like, I mean, they even reference John Wick in the movie, like, as a, like a throwaway line. But, like, the way they market it is very John Wick-esque, like, really fast editing, and like even the color palette of it is very John Wick, but it's not like John Wick at all. It's a lot slower. There's a lot more like cerebral, visceral, like talking and character moments. It's a lot like
there's like a psychedelic moment.
For a movie that's very loud and energetic and high paced, there are a lot of like really slow moments as well where you like kind of just sit back and like talk.
For a movie that got a wide release, it's like quite art house. So I guess like that's the surprising thing about it when I went into it. It took me actually a good second to realize that this was an action movie, because it doesn't start with an action scene. Like, I feel like most movies which are fighty movies start with like a car chase or like someone running from a villain. But this one starts with like these super close-ups of a mum telling her son a story. And there's all this like half hint of that plot. And then it snaps into focus when the first action, big action sequence happens. Mm. But before that, you're kind of like, what's going on? Like, what's this guy trying to do? You don't know their motivations. You never actually learn the main character's name. It's very like, what's happening? And then you're like, oh, wait, this is an action movie.
Yeah, like the first action sequence that Tracy's talking about goes for a very long time. Like, I want to say like 20, 30 minutes kind of long. Like, it does this thing where like every time a scene would end where you think the movie would usually like stop that action scene, but then it would just go back into another action sequence. Like, after that, like, 20, 30 minute, there was a scene where he would, like, it finally, like, stopped, and someone in our cinema, like, just, like, sighed, and, like, really loudly, and everyone just laughed as well, because we were all on the same page of, like, oh my gosh, this just went on for so long. It was a brutal movie as well.
Yeah. Mm. There's just so much blood and spit and sweat, and Dev Patel was always covered in the combination of those bodily fluids.
Yeah, like, even in real life as well, like, he broke his arm, his hand. when he filmed it on the first day.
The doctor was like,
don't do anything intensive with your hands. And he's like, yeah, sure. And then he filmed this movie.
Yeah, exactly. He was like, gotta get back to work, chief. Sorry. Yeah.
God, you went through hell filming this, I guess. Maybe that's why, like, there's a lot of, like, shaky cam in this movie. And it makes sense then, because he had to film a lot of this on iPhone, apparently.
No, not all of it. Just, like, there are some of it where it was, like, he'd be filming with an iPhone on a rickshaw, I think is what he said. Like, there are sequences in, like, really tight corridors as well where it's very fast and it's, like, a car chase and that sort of stuff. I think it kind of goes to show, like, the kind of the running go shoot kind of style aesthetic of it. Like, it's very, like, impromptu on the spot. Like, it's not a high action, high budget kind of movie at all. It's very, like...
But that's the thing. Like, even though it's really quite low budget, the fight scenes hit. They hit like a truck. They're so visceral. Like, you can feel, like, oh, that hurts. Like, every time he bites someone or stabs a knife into someone and pulls it out with his teeth, you're like, you cringe with the, oh, that hurt. I can feel that.
I haven't seen the movie, but the only promo I've kind of seen is his interview with Ali Plum. And he was talking about all of the different production failures, including the finger thing, and how it was on the wrap-up shirt that everyone on the cast and crew got as like the screw that held the film together because of all of the mess that happened about like scouting locations in India, and then with lockdown having to be forced to go to Indonesia, losing like half of the crew, and then same with like the iPhone and the rickshaw. But I think one of the coolest things, I haven't really seen the clip, but he said that there was that a fight scene in an elevator, mm-hmm. and the cameraman was a stuntman, so which is why the movements were really fluid, because he was also dodging from all of the punches and ducks, and that's kind of how it gets that, I don't know, dance-like element. I'm not sure if I'm describing it justice, but it was like, this sounds crazy, and I think that's probably the only reason I really want to go see it. It's like, how did it turn out after all the mess that was behind it?
Oh, it felt so video game. Like, I guess John Wick also has this where, like, you have different bosses that you have to fight to get to the main boss. But in this movie, there's literally a scene where he has to, like, go up different elevators. Like, he has to go in the elevator, go up a level and fight someone, then finish the fight, go up for the elevator and fight someone else. Like, that's so video game. That was so cool. I love that. I liked how this movie, even though, like, at times it's, like, very quite serious and obviously very brutal, it gave some time to, like, moments of levity like that. Like, the sort of normalcy of getting to the elevator and going up after you've just killed someone brutally. Like, there's also, it's like, sometimes it's like genuinely funny. Like, it tries to be funny and it actually succeeds in being funny.
Like, I referring this movie to John Wick is a bit of like an understatement, I suppose, because he took a lot of inspiration from a lot more like martial arts action movies as well. A lot of them of which are predominantly Asian as well.
Yeah.
Like when he talks about like Bruce Lee movies or like Korean revenge movies as well, like the scenes with the elevators mirroring like Old Boy,
yeah.
for instance. Even like just the whole concept of him going up an elevator is very like, what's that movie? Is it The Raid? Like when you were talking about that, I was like, oh, that sounds like The Raid. So, there is obviously, like, a lot of Asian action influence as well. I was talking with someone about this before, but it's, like the portrayal of Indian actors in, like, Hollywood versus, like, Indian filmmaking and, like, Bollywood and stuff. Like, I think Bollywood is very heavy on, like, action scenes. Like, at, like action movies as a whole as well. But, like, in Hollywood movies, you don't normally get them starring as, like, an action hero. So I think that is a really interesting kind of portrayal or representation in Western media, at least. And I think very interesting, very cool. So cool.
So cool.
Yeah.
So what's the story?
The story is not important.
For Alicia, that's like the most important part.
Yeah, that's why. What? No, the story. Oh my God. I mean, yeah, this movie does like the main drive. It's an action film that is obviously revolving about revenge. And then even when I went into the movie, that was kind of like the whole thing that was just in my head of like, oh, Dev Patel's playing this character and he's seeking revenge up like from these big baddies because like something happened with his mom, don't know what. But this movie has so much like socio-political commentary just like jam-packed into the film that I was just not expecting at all. Let me give some examples and you would be stunned as I was. Don't worry, none of these are like spoiler territory, because if you go to like any Dev Patel interview, he mentions these things are like going on in the film as well. So for example, how religion is kind of being weaponized by the antagonists of the films and how it leads into corruption in this like fictionalized Indian society that this film is taking place in. And then also a lot of emphasis about the caste system that's still kind of prevalent in current modern day India. Even talks about like sex trafficking, and they even have this massive part of the film which is very dedicated to the hijra community. And basically, if you're unaware about what this community is, it is a community in India that is kind of deemed like the third gender community. So it is kind of, the word hijra is seen as like an umbrella term for people who might identify as trans or intersex along in their bracket where they neither feel male or female, or they identify, they're born in a certain body but they identify with another type. And this community for years now has been very like demonized in the society. And since we're talking about film world, in Indian film, they're very notoriously as well kind of seen as like a comic relief character. So it's very interesting that in this movie, they are a very like heavily highlighted community that not only helps like Dev Patel's character in the film, but they're also not being shown as like the comic relief. They're not demonized. They're seen as like strong, powerful, part of Dev Patel's character's like underdog race of fighting against oppression, all that stuff. And that was just so, it was just so sick to me, especially since this film is being shown to like predominantly Western lenses, where for a lot of people, I know Ethan and Tracy, especially when we went out of the cinema, y'all's first like reaction was like, some of the stuff you had like no idea about, because it's just like, I didn't know this was prevalent in like Indian society, or like, oh, there's so much talk about Hanuman, for example, who is this Indian deity, very popular in this Indian epic tale called Ramayana. And y'all were like, there's so many references to that. I have like no idea. But I was like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know. This movie is just, I love when a film gets people to, who weren't exposed to the culture or anything, to actually like search it up on their own time. I've seen so many other reviewers as well who've seen this film. They spend like, the movie made them look up all these things, which are kind of integral to like, I guess, half of my culture and all that stuff. And speaking of Hanuman, which I didn't even explain, I just said Hanuman. Hanuman, basically, again,
I'm going to stop you right there, Alicia, right as she's getting into it. We're going to break for some more songs. This first one is a song that was actually on the soundtrack to Monkey Man. It comes from a guy called Punjabi MC, who is a British Indian, I guess, musician, rapper. This original song is called Mundiyan Tobake, but I found out there was actually a remix of this song featuring Jay-Z, which is such like a fun like cultural clash. Apparently this song was massive in 2002, so yeah, one of the oldest songs we've played on APN, I guess. This remix, it's called Beware of the Boys. So you're listening to Asian Pop Nation, a show where Asian people talk about Asian things. You've just heard a bit of a hip hop moment here on APN tonight. The first song we played was a song from the soundtrack of Monkey Man called Mundiyan Tobake by Punjabi MC, specifically the remix featuring Jay-Z.
Oh my God. I was going to say that song is like trauma inducing for little Lucia.
Why?
No, it's just one of those like, again, it's like I go to a social in school and then they're like, oh, the DJ knows that that one person there is like Indian or something. And then they're like, they put the song on and it's like looking at you like, you know this like song. Yeah, like that stuff. And it's like, yeah, I know it. All right. Yeah. Anyways.
After that, we played Showdown 2024 by Huckleberry P, featuring a whole bunch of people. Side B, Palo Alto and 99 Nasty Kids. So this is from their album Readmission, which is just solid album full of old school hip hop bangers from Huckleberry P. After that, we played a song from Dynamic Duo featuring PH1 and Junie called Pitapa. And right now we're going to jump right back into our talk on Monkey Man. Before the break, Alicia was talking about how cool it was that this movie was encouraging more people to seek out and learn about Indian culture. And right now she's going to get into the legend of Hanuman that is like a central motif of the movie.
Yes. Throughout the entire movie, there's so many like flashes to this sort of like artwork that flashes to like various phases of Hanuman. And I just know like Ethan and Tracy, probably when they're watching that, some of the stuff might have like came out of nowhere, like jump scare moment of like, whoa, random monkey man in the middle of it. But I was very intrigued that Dev Patel decided to pick Hanuman, the specific god, for this film to kind of like parallel with, I guess, his protagonist's journey. And I think actually the parallels work very creatively together for some basic context. For example, like Hanuman, and this is a scene they literally show right in the beginning. Tracy touched upon it about how like the movie starts out with just like mom and kid talking, and the mom is literally talking about the beginning story of Hanuman, about how Hanuman as a kid would try to like reach up for what he thought was like a fruit, but it was actually the sun. But then the gods were like, you're being reckless and a prankster and abusing your powers and blah, 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 and all that stuff. You look like you're trying to steal the sun. And then they like thunderbolt him. And not only that, yes, that is canon. They also strip him of his powers. And like Hanuman in the beginning is very much like, how do I say it? Like, again, like a prankster kind of using his powers in a selfish manner. But then he ends up becoming at the end a devoted follower and helper to, as the tale goes, to this prince named Raman, who his wife Sita was being like abducted by this demon king, and basically at some point like Hanuman he puts his big boy pants up and then he's out there like helping out and fighting, but it's like his loyalty and devotion even at the very end when he does save Sita, it's very much out of like, oh, because I have so much devotion, love, and care for the both of you, and I'm serving you, blah, blah, blah. And then in the actual tale itself, he does this, like, very... The way I can do the imagery for y'all is, like, if you see Superman, and he always does that iconic thing where he's, like, stripping the chest out to reveal the symbol and all that stuff. Hanuman does that, but he's ripping out his chest, and inside it is, like, a picture of Sita and Raman. And, hey, even the film... got that going for it. This is one of the crazy imageries you will see in the film. But it's just so cool to see like those sort of stuff from like a very ancient tale being brought in like this film. But yeah, it's so I just want to go so in depth about it, but it is going straight into spoiler territory. But I will say, if you are someone who's already seen it and you want to know about the parallels of Hanuman and Monkey Man, the film specifically, there's this really great creator online. They go under the name of like Chivalry_Inc. And she did an amazing video detailing the tales of Hanuman and how it directly parallels to Monkey Man. I don't know. Is there like other stuff that you guys particularly really liked about this movie personally for y'all?
I was just gonna say, the Hanuman being a central motive makes the whole movie feel very like almost fantasy-like because of how literal it is with some of the parallels. Like, it doesn't feel like a movie that exists in this world. It sort of exists in this mythology plane.
But it brings, like, at the same time, even though it's so, like, outwardly almost, but it, like, kind of brings it back down to real-world stuff by having all this stuff happening with, like, the antagonist and, again, the way, like, the story of Hanuman and, I guess, like, in this movie specifically, they're referring to Hinduism, the religion group, and how it's, like, being weaponized by the antagonist, but also how at the same time, in Dev Patel's, like, his... up and coming into the person he is at the end and kind of like the leader and all that stuff, how it can also teach him things because he relies so much on that tale. That's one of his memories with his mother, but it also serves as like his, he sees like Hanuman, like, oh my God, Hanuman leads this monkey army and helps and fights for the greater good, kind of starts from like, not like, starts in a kind of almost selfish-esque place, but becoming this leader that is, like, loved by everyone, all that stuff, and seeing how Dev Patel's character also kind of has that, and his army, in this case, is, like, the Hydra community that comes into play at the end of it. It's just, oh my God!
That was so cool.
It's so sick. It's so sick. I love movies, guys. I love movies. While I love all these themes, and I am even shocked that for his debut film, he was pulling all of this in altogether. So ambitious. Love him for that. I think the film kind of struggles a bit to explore particular ones of them, like particular themes further. I remember a lot of stuff with the antagonist when we had freshly got out of the cinema. That was the first thing that I think a lot of us were like a bit confused by the end of it.
Yeah, because the antagonist, like the religious antagonist, is pretty much like alluded to via like newsreels and stuff. Like it's very like, oh, there's like a 30-second snatch of like a news announcement here and there. And it's, if you're dumb like me, you just won't get it. I was just like, okay, this guy is like kind of prominent, I guess. Oh, I don't know what the significance of this is. But then Leisha explained it to me after. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes more sense. But I think if you didn't have that knowledge, you wouldn't have known like what the purpose of him, what like all those newsreels and stuff were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but this movie doesn't hold your hand. I don't think it wants to.
I don't want the film to like go through these themes and kind of explain the whole like 101 for dummies about it. I just think like certain stuff of it, I felt like I would have loved to see like all these themes, but maybe like a couple of them be more heavily focused. I felt like it just felt at some point it was like jam packing all of these, but then still having to pull a balancing act, which is really tough to do. And I admire this movie for it, balancing it as like an action film. And sometimes I am like, oh, wow, we're kind of losing a little bit of the several themes that are being like brought up here. It would have been cool to like still present all of these, but maybe like heavily focus on like two or like one very particular thing. Oh yeah, no, Tracy, go.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about the action in this movie, and the action is amazing and is obviously like the main focal point. But I like the music in this movie, and specifically that drumming in the Hijira when he goes to the Hijira.
Ah, the training scene.
Yes, I love the training montage.
Which isn't a spoiler because it's in the same interview that Zenyo talked about. It's in the clip. They put it there in the interview. But yes, every action movie has to have like a quintessential training scene. It's kind of it's like what? Rom-coms having a makeover scene. It's very quintessential. And this training scene is so good, Tracy!
Yes, I love the drumming accompaniment.
Yeah.
I like how it's humorous, but it's so intense at the same time. There's this interesting juxtaposition.
Yeah, no, and I think, like, something that Ethan even, like, mentioned, it's like, I remember Dev Patel literally saying that scene, bringing the tabla, which is the hand drum that Tracy's referring to, bringing that into this fighting scene and everything. I remember Dev Patel saying, like, oh, I really wanted to accompany music into this because it's so prevalent in Indian films in general. And I was like, I guess it's kind of a little homage to it. And it's so good. I love when he's also shirtless, but that's just me. But the actual whole scene is crazy. And it's one of those where it's like, as I'm watching, I was like, oh my God, my heart is beating at the, it's just going like 20 million miles per hour by this scene. It's just so aggressive. But I love, again, like you mentioned, Tracy, the element of like, the training scene doesn't exclusively stick to him. He starts like bringing everybody else in the community as well, and they also start punching the bag, and it's so like, I love it.
It's really a communal healing.
Yeah, it's very emphasizing about his character and the Hijra community as well in the film are like very completely marginalized from this like everyday society, the high life that they're going after. I don't know, it's like that whole scene of them like coming together and all that other stuff. It was so like, oh God.
It was very heartwarming, yeah.
I love films.
So I guess we've come to the final question, or the second last question of the segment, which is, how many Dev Patels out of 10 would you rate this movie?
How many Dev Patels? Ethan, yeah, how many Dev Patels would you rate this?
What a strange question.
Yeah,
it's like an 8 out of 10 for me. It's good. I liked it.
Yeah, I also think it's an 8 out of 10 for me.
Oh, I'm so bad at ranking stuff out of like 10. I've like got the litter box brain rot of rating everything out of 5.
Just times it by 2.
I'm like, I originally was like a 4 out of 5, which I think is like a 80% sort of thing, but I bumped it up to like a 4.5 out of 5 because especially as we were like prepping to talk about it on APN, I think I just found like more and more reasons why I really, really like this movie.
Yeah.
As somebody who loves action films as well, I think this film just brings something new to a genre that is crazy to even say, because I feel like the action genre is very saturated. Thank you, Marvel, and the superhero genre for doing that. But it still is able to bring something completely new with so much like Indian culture and love just like injected into it. And I love it. Again, as a half Indian girly, this was so, it was just so sick. It was so cool to see this on like the cinemas in Australia, in like Western eyes. I would never thought we would be here. Like, this is crazy. Oh.
And I guess the last question would be, who would you recommend this movie to? I would first of all say I would recommend this movie to adults. It is not for children.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. Unless your children are very open to like,
please be above 15 while watching this movie. Other than that, though, anyone who likes action, anyone who likes like interesting cinema and is sick of like the same old formulaic stuff that keeps on getting put out by Hollywood, anyone interested in a movie which is like different to what you'd usually see, anyone who wants to be, I guess, challenged also by a movie as well. Not in like a, oh, this is impenetrable. It's a very easy to watch movie, but just like it's really different to what usually gets shown in theatre, wide theatre release. But yeah, I think that's great. You said a lot of good words there, Leisha.
Oh, and Ethan and Tracy too. Y'all said some great stuff. And Zenia with her questions. Yes, shout out to everyone.
Yeah. We all loved Monkey Man, but as much as we love this, as much as we love this movie, it's also important to love yourself. And that's the name of the next song we're going to play. It's by Yua. Keep it tuned here on Nation Pop Nation. guys. This is Tracy from Asian Pop Nation, and I can confirm that we are, in fact, recording. So, Asian Pop Nation, welcome back to Asian Pop Nation. We are recording. We are live. We are not live. We are alive in the studio. This is a high audio quality version of Asian Pop Nation. We have all these people here watch me forgetting how to record things live. So the last three songs we've just played were You Are with Love Myself, Impossible by Rise, and finally Give Yourself to Me, a very Rina Sawayama-esque jam by Kat and Kamel, who are both Australian artists. And last week we talked about a music festival that was happening here in Australia called Sold Out, actually 2 weeks ago. And right now we're going to be talking about a music festival that is a lot further away, in America to be exact, and the festival is called Coachella. I'm going to pass you over to Leisha now for more of the deets.
Hi, that was very like news reporter official just now, passing it over to
breaking
news. Like, I am live on Coachella right now and I'm just about to hear Le Serpent perform. No, it is me, Leisha. Yes, I'm going to be talking, giving you the rundown of Coachella, all the Asian acts that were there, primarily going to be focusing on weekend one, because as of us recording is right now, weekend two had just started. But yes, Coachella. I would say Coachella in the past like year or so, it's been dubbed amongst the music festival goers that it's kind of falling out. She's not as popular. She's lost the ring. Nobody cares. It's just influencer fashion show at this point. But I would say this year, Coachella is so back, guys, on the music front. I swear, like, this is the first time in a long time where I've just seen, like, once the weekend rolls around, it's just boom, Coachella clip here, there. Some which involve some of the Asian acts we're going to be talking more in depth about in this segment, but I just wanted to chat a bit about some of the performances that I got a peek here and there from in Coachella, which are all by Asian artists. Firstly, 88 Rising, as they do, always has their own set, and this time they've had some really fun combinations. Firstly, Atarashi Gaku, who's this Japanese girl group that absolutely ate their set. Like, if there's a set you haven't seen and you want to check it out, please watch theirs. It's so fun. It's just so lively. Show these girls more love. BB and Jackson did a song together, which was not expecting it. And then it also had like other acts such as like hip hop icon herself, Yoon Mirai, Tracy's love. But another one which was like very shocking to me personally was they have this Chinese female solo artist. Her name is Xing Liu, and I know her purely because I used to be obsessed with this show called Youth with You Too, totally not because Lisa from Blackpink was one of the judges there, but I was crazy about that show, and she was like the first, I guess, like winner in that trainee group competition thing, and she got like the center position in that group that did not exist anymore. But this is like her big solo artist revival moment, and one of her first times ever being on Western soil, sort of say, and she came out of there with the song called Reality, which is like a fully English song too. So like, and apparently she's also a new like 88 Rising debut girl lead in there, so she's eating. I was just so shocked to even see her. Oh my gosh. Another artist that I was not shocked to see but shocked to find this additional info for was Twee. She was there flying really fast from Australia after Sold Out straight to Coachella, and what was shocking to me was that her performing there made her like the first Vietnamese American artist ever to perform in Coachella, and Coachella has existed for like eons at this point. So I was shocked and so happy for her. She's so talented. Listen to our Sold Out festival review and Twee solo concert review from like two shows ago to find out more about how this girl is just iconic. Now we're going into the K-pop-y sort of realm, where I think our team is gonna have a lot of chats about, because there's been a lot of talks about one particular group. But before there were some really surprisingly cool performances from The Rose, who I know they're fresh out of being their own independent agency and all that stuff out of the K-pop company hellhole. Oh, but they were there on the Coachella floor. Amazing. 80s was also there. I did not watch the whole thing personally, but I did see clips of them performing the song Gorilla, and there's this one line in Gorilla where they do like the break the wall, but in a completely like screamo way, and the entire crowd, it sounded like a cult, but in like the best way possible. It was insane the way they were screaming break the wall, and I saw clips how other people could hear it from different areas of Coachella. Like, it was so damn loud. It was so funny. Oh my gosh. But the one performance which seems to have gotten not just K-pop people's attention, but a lot of outsiders, it is Le Sserafim, the girl group that I personally like, and I think some people also really like. They have been kind of in the hot seat for their first ever Coachella performance for various reasons, and we'll say it's not good, particularly on the vocal standpoint. And I'll say personally for me, I saw the stream. I watched the whole Le Sserafim live stream, watched it, had fun, went out. Ooh. Like, went out, lived my life, and then came back like 24 hours later, and suddenly everyone was talking about it, to the point that even I was sending clips to Lee, not the resident K-pop person here on APN. I was sending her clips of other performances at Coachella. She's like, oh my god, this is so great. And I also saw the Le Sserafim clips, and I was like, wait a minute, you saw the Le Sserafim clips? And then when we talked about it on radio, Jesse was like, yeah, I also saw the Le Sserafim clips. I was like, these two people I do not associate with, like, keeping up with that sort of side of K-pop. So that was my indicator of like, oh no, this has breached the gates. And it is because a lot of people have been saying how vocally bad the performance is. Now, for y'all who have seen the clips, what do you guys think?
No, I'm a big Le Sserafim fan myself, actually. And I really enjoyed this set. Like,
like the energy, you feel like they're really like, yes, pumping up the energy in the set.
And I think like watching specifically like Yoonjin, because she has like that American background, and like she was like talking to the audience, yep, and she dropped a little like few swear words here and there, and it was, yeah, like, it was super fun to see that. But yeah, I've always thought that like vocally pretty solid. Like, yeah, I really love like Yoonjin's like solo work specifically, but yeah, they just got completely like destroyed.
Yeah, trashed.
It was so interesting to see.
Immediately. It is just crazy. It's been a hot minute since I've seen a hate train this massive, considering how far, again, it has breached beyond just like K-pop-y general nonsense. Obviously, with Le Sserafim performing here, they're not the first K-pop girl group ever to perform. So when this set dropped and everyone was dissing it, immediately a lot of people were like, oh well, like Blackpink performed 2 times before, aespa has performed before, even 21 with their surprise like set ages ago, they've all performed, here's like examples of how they performed, and here's Le Sserafim's performance, like, see the difference. Oh my,
yeah,
god,
they're like comparing these huge groups, and Le Sserafim like is like really like baby in comparison.
Yeah, it's interesting to me as well, because I know, as somebody who is a Blackpink fan and also an aespa fan, that in that particular time when they performed at Coachella, people were ripping them into shreds as well. And now they're bringing, those performances are being brought back as the golden standard of how like the girl groups are supposed to be, like, and Le Sserafim is the example of the really, really like bad one. So I am like, there is no consistency with the K-pop fandom on this. This is why we can't have any constructive criticism of anything in this damn genre of music and culture, subculture, or whatever. It's just, oh my god, that's just what aggravates me a little bit. Yeah, and I'll just say as well, like, K-pop fans have a very weird way of working with criticism. say that. Even as someone who watched the Le Sserafim performance, I had a lot of fun, but I can definitely tell that there were, like, certain parts that I think vocally, like, I think there's just small bits and pieces which I think can only come from a lot of experience performing live, that Le Sserafim haven't necessarily gotten that right yet. I think in that performance, they really seemed like they wanted to nail both dance and singing all together and be this powerful unit. But I think there were some moments when, like, you could tell they sounded, like, exhausted as they were, yeah, singing. And hence why, like, some, like, off-pitch moments, like, came in. And I'm like, oh my god, girls, please either take a breather or, like, as they were, like, rehearsing for the set, maybe, like, switch up some stuff that maybe for some songs they can, like, run around the stage and sing along with the fans. Again, clearly they wanted this Coachella debut for them to be, like, a bang. Yeah, it's just like small stuff to me, and I feel like that comes off as like constructive criticism, but K-pop fans will take that and immediately be like, oh okay, that equals they're bad. That equals Le Sserafim sucks at singing, full stop. And this is why now they're like bombarded on all their social media with comments of everyone being like, you can't sing live. Like,
yeah, you got, it's so very like black and white. Like, there's, yeah, other people being like, it was so bad, Le Sserafim sucks. But like, no, They were really good. Like, protect them. Like, they've been...
Yeah.
K-pop fans have a big problem with black and white thinking. It's probably because most of them are quite young and very protective and obsessive about their artists.
Yeah.
And they see it as this zero-sum game where the more you can bring down the seraphim, the higher the other groups can rise.
Yeah, exactly. I'll say especially within Le Sserafim's case, I am semi not surprised that they've gotten some sort of backlash. I did not expect it to be this big, though. Mm. But I was not surprised because the girls were already... they already had a target on their head for quite a while since, like, Unforgiven came out, I would say. Anti-Fragile was when everyone was like, yes!
This is the best group.
This is the best. They're going to shape the industry. Unforgiven came and everyone was like, oh, these guys are a flop.
Easy.
Yeah, and then Easy furthered the blow a little bit. And then Perfect Night was, like, the middle child there, which was, like, the...
No, I think it was, like, they were the perfect poster child. And then as soon as Easy came out, they're like, finally, a terrible song. Let's jump on them.
No, I will say the reason why I bring up Unforgiven was that that was... To me, start of it, because they had that encore stage for Unforgiven. And in that one, Sakura got a lot of flack at that time when they did the encore stage for a music show. Because vocally, she was not sounding great. Even I will say that. And then that was the start of it. And then I felt like everything kind of snowballed to like where we are now.
Mm-hmm. We did watch their performance in the studio before to give the non-K-pop some context. And Xenia, what did you think as someone who isn't surrounded by K-pop nonsense of the performance?
I think it was hard to judge because from fan cams, most of the things you can hear is just other fans around you screaming. Yeah. But I thought their choreography was still fine. I didn't notice anything wrong with it. The singing... Again, couldn't really hear.
Exactly.
And from the reels where the backing tracks were moved, it sounds off, but I'm not sure if it's just because of the technique or, I don't know, the program used. Yeah, right. That made it sound off. But, like, every artist has their off performances, I feel like.
Yeah.
What I know about the K-pop world and the K-pop fan base is that you guys need to take a chill pill.
Yeah. I think that's a perfect place to leave it, actually. Guys, take a chill pill. Just do us a favor and take a chill pill.
The girls will improve. That's how life works. Improvement happens. Look at Dua Lipa or something.
Yeah, I guess K-pop fans need to learn how to control their emotions. Speaking of which, the next song we're going to play is Emotion Control by Koo Won Chan.
Hello.
Okay, that was some harrowing stuff right there. Welcome back to Asian Pop Nation. We've just played three very cool tracks. First of all, we played Emotion Control by Korean singer-songwriter, all-around wonderful voice man, Koo Won Chan. After that, we played a song called Lucky by Kaneko Ayano. And finally, we played a song from Vast and Hazy called Looper. And right now, we are recording the last segment of the show, the last proper talk segment. We decided that we're going to be talking about K-pop pop-up shops. This is a topic that most of us for some reason have some experience with, so we thought it would be a good sort of very Asian way to close out this show.
I would say we initially are having this conversation in the first place because, as y'all are aware, Tracy has mentioned, we are in studio this time, and on our way to the studio, a few of you guys literally were like, I'm walking in Emporium and tell me why I see a Le Sserafim pop-up store just poofed out of nowhere. And I need y'all to give me a refresher of like which one of you guys has actually seen it.
So I got here a bit early, so I was wondering, right?
Yes.
And I went to Emporium and I was like, oh, there's another store that replaced the BTS pop-up store that was here recently. So I was like, huh, I wonder who it is. Boom, Le Sserafim printed right there. And like, Le Sserafim has like a really black and white design about their logo and everything. And so when I looked at the store, I was like, this looks like the entrance to a luxury store or like some museum.
Oh my God.
Because it was like just black and white and there were just random thing. You know how like with those fancy like fashion stores?
Yes.
Like how they have like the clothes just kind of like levitating in some way.
Right, okay,
and it's not
I'm getting
even,
it.
Like most stores you have clothes on racks. In like fancy stores, no, they levitate them.
my
and
God.
That was what they were doing with like the little Seraphim branded, I think it was like sports bras and tops and that kind of thing.
Sportswear.
I don't know. They had like a sportswear line or something, and that's what they were levitating. And then the rest and then the rest of the interior of the store was like black and white, so it looked super duper fancy. And I was like, okay, there's like 10 minutes to go till we actually have to record. I don't want to enter this store. I'm scared of this store. So I just took a photo and then walked away. But Bella actually went into the store.
I was in Melbourne Central originally with some friends, and then the friends left. And then I was like, oh yeah, that I remembered that there was like the Le Seraphim pop-up shop. So I thought I'd go visit it. I kind of got lost, but it's fine. We found it. And originally I was like, can I even go in here? Like, it looked so intimidating.
Yeah, literally. I was like, am I allowed?
Yeah, I think firstly, like, the staff had, like, these black shirts with, like, the white text saying, like, oh, Flame Roses, Le Seraphim. And there were, like, these, like, three, like, guys wearing those shirts, like, standing in front of the shop. And I was like, am I allowed to go in? Is there...
They look like security guys.
Yeah, that's what
I
thought.
I was like, is it invite only?
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God.
It was, like, so sophisticated. Yeah. No, so I went in and I took, like, a piece of paper from one of the staff members, had all like the prices and stuff, and like the stuff was like laid out like a museum, the floating clothes, the like photo cards, yeah, all so expensive. But yeah, no, as I walked out there were like children that came in, like a family came in, yeah, there were heaps of people actually.
Oh my goodness. No, I'm so like shocked. It's so, it sounds so like bougie and fancy, and I'm like, okay, Le Seraphim high budget is doing you well right now. But Jesse, you mentioned earlier that like I guess storefront used to be the BTS one.
Yeah.
And Taruki, you've been to it when it was like the BTS one. How would you describe like the ambiance? Like, is it like completely different vibes entirely?
I haven't been into it, but from what I'm hearing from you guys, it's like I feel like BTS was like really purple and like yellow writing. And it's like very colorful and like very open, I guess. And it's like for me, I purchased like a lot of things. Like, my parents don't even know that I spent that much money on merchandise.
No,
but
wait, they better not listen. Don't tell them to listen to that this episode.
And I think from what I've heard, what the Le Seraphim like colors, it kind of reminds me of like Chanel packaging. Like,
yeah, no, again, very like, luxury brand sort of vibe. Yeah.
It feels less inviting compared to like BTS. Yeah. And like 110%. BTS stuff seems more fun and like something that I would actually want to buy from.
I was just saying, though, going off of that point, I don't know, in my head, I'm like, oh, pop-up shops, it's just like, you know, capitalism. It's just a place to buy merch of your favorite artists, and that's it. But actually seeing that the environment, they're like semi trying to cater it to the vibes or like the concept that the artist is actually going for, because the Le Seraphim one, it like kind of makes sense to me why it's that sort of vibe, because Le Seraphim's debut song, Fearless, it rides on that very like luxe chic runway sort of vibe. I'm pretty sure they also are wearing activewear in that music video and in like Perfect Night as well, so it like kind of checks out. And then BTS, they've kind of like, they've had many images in the past, but in like present day, they're seen as like, oh, biggest boy band in the world, loved by a lot. So it's clear they wanted to make it very like, heart for the fans, we love Boranghae or whatever the people say. It's just intriguing how like they're actually trying to go like the extra mile a bit for the fans, for the people.
So some of you guys have mentioned that when you guys went to Japan or Korea, you guys like ran into pop-up shops there.
Oh yeah, Bella.
Yes.
Well, Bella's one is more like, she said it off air and I was like, huh? Mine was just, I went to Tokyo like a few years back. This was even like before I got into uni. And then I was just there walking around, and then I got like the shock of my life when I saw this one building and they plastered that they had like Red Velvet pop-up shop. And y'all, if you don't know me, Red Velvet's like my favorite group ever. So I was like, the stars are aligning, the universe loves me. I get to see my girls, not in real life, in cardboard format, but that's fine. I want to say I went there like 2019 and all that stuff, and that pop-up shop, it was done more in honor of a concert that they were going to do soon in Japan. So I wouldn't say there was like a heavy theme going on. There were like 5 cardboard cutouts of the girls. The walls were painted red because haha, Red Velvet. And then here's the merch. You wait in line to buy them, and then you're out of the door, and that's kind of it, you know? But from what I've seen from these other stores, there is like a lot of commitment, I guess, to have like stuff for fans to like Google and all that stuff, like photo cards for you to see and be like, oh my god, or like special little goodies and stuff that like, oh my god, that's like the I don't know, like that's the ball that one of the characters, one of the idols used in this one music video, like oh my god, that sort of stuff. But yeah, I don't know, that was like kind of my thing. And then when I was in Malaysia most recently, I did go to the New Jeans pop-up, and I could tell the Hive money is strong with that one as well, because it's so, New Jeans one is interesting to me because you're not getting, they have cardboard cutouts, but it's not of the girls themselves. It's like an anime-fied version of the girls. Jesse is nodding yes.
If I'm not wrong, I think it's like, was it like Powerpuff Girl vibe?
Yeah, because they had
a collaboration. Yeah,
they have a
so
collab
that's,
with
yeah.
Powerpuff Girls, yes. And then they had merch which was associated with that, but they also had the cardboard cutouts, which are so like, I can only say it's like very like anime sort of like style, which was very interesting to me. And all the photo op sections that they had of this pop up were all of the cardboard cutouts of the cartoonized version of New Jeans, which is like, ooh, okay, so they're aesthetic. But Bella, you also went to Japan at one point. You did not see the Red Velvet one.
No,
you saw
I didn't.
A more interesting pop up.
Yeah, back to Hype.
Yes.
Yeah, I was, we were walking. I was a school trip, so we were all walking, like our little group in like Shibuya, I think. And no, I kept seeing like these like girls dressed up in like cosplay of like school uniforms like and things, and I was like, this is looking familiar, and more as I like started walking. And then we passed like an Enhypen pop-up for their webtoon, like Dark Blood, Dark Moon, something to do with vampires and a school. And yeah, they had like these like, I didn't go in, but we passed it and I was like, what is this? I'd never seen anything like this. They had like trading cards and like collectible things that I could see on like the sign.
Oh my goodness.
And like there'd been heaps that had been like crossed out and sold out. And it was super interesting to me, yeah.
Damn, that is crazy to me that's like a pop-up specifically, not for a concert, not for like, oh, I love the artist.
No,
it's like a pop-up for this webtoon.
It's so
artist,
like...
which is one of those like, if you're a fan, you know moment of like, ooh, I love this webtoon plot. And Hypen too. I can't believe they have a webtoon.
Yeah.
But I guess that's like a little taste into the world of K-pop pop-up stores. It's something to me that's kind of unique in the K-pop sphere. I think the closest equivalent would be like Genshin having collabs with like bubble tea shops or something. I just activated like another piece of info for Jesse. I've had my fair share of those when I was in Malaysia, by the way. It was insane how popular those get. Yeah, I guess if you've been on your own like pop-up shops here and there, Melbourne, elsewhere, let us know. APN on our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We have those. Guys, and moving on to our last few songs of the night, we are going to be playing the song titled Hot Sauce, which comes from two artists, first Harry and Rinnie, which is a very big favorite of Lee's. And you're listening to Asian Pop Nation right here on Sin.
Hey guys, this is Tracy, back to send you off for the night as we wrap up the show. Today was a fun show. We were in the studio. We met Annabella, who is our new member for APN. Let me run you down the last three songs you just played. First up, we played Harry and Rini with their song Hot Sauce. After that, we played a song by K-indie artist Mudmud called Even Narrower Than O. And lastly, we played a song by LOL called Embarrassed. Today was the first show of season two, and it was a pretty hectic show. We talked about a lot of things. We said hi to Bella. We also talked through Monkey Man and Coachella. And finally, we did a fun segment about the phenomenon of K-pop pop-up shops. Thank you so much for joining Asian Pop Nation tonight. I just want to go around the room so you guys can all say goodbye as well to the audience.
Bye, audience. Woo! I mean, thanks.
Thank you, Lucia.
TYTY.
Thank you for listening. It was really fun recording today, and hope you enjoyed.
Yeah, thanks to Ruki. You go.
Thank you for listening. It was so fun. My first presenting experience, and yeah, I'm so happy to be here.
And nice. Yes.
Thanks for listening, guys. Was nice to meet Annabella as well.
Yay.
What about the rest
thanks,
of us?
Jesse.
Wow, I know you guys already, guys. We're solid. We're solid.
Like, I wasn't going to get you guys to do that, but then I got you guys to do that. So I guess we're keeping that in. Yeah, and we also had stopping by tonight, Ethan and Enya.
Never forgotten.
Never forgotten. And right now, I guess there's nothing else to say but to send you off with the last song we have tonight. This is a song called Can't You See by Singaporean artist Shy. This has been Asian Pop Nation. Hope you all have a good night, and we'll be back on the airwaves Tuesday next week.